You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
You certainly are on my couch, as you always are here Wednesdays, 11 in the morning, actually Pacific Standard Time, and wherever you're joining me around the world, welcome. I'm Dr. Michelle Cohen, and I'm having a special guest today talk about a subject that I've been fascinated with for many years. Not quite sure why, and she can possibly tell me why. Just a little heads up, folks out there, if you're a little skeptical about people who claim to be what are called experiencers nowadays, of Close Encounters of ETs of the Third Kind, remember that movie, right? Well, I think you might want to open your mind a little bit to what my guest has to say. Over the past several years, she has decided to finally come out to talk about her many odd and fascinating experiences and, of course, talk about her book and share her book with us. It's called Some of My Best Friends Are ETs. That's a wonderful positive message. Her experiences, by the way, opened up my mind. And after meeting her in person, I know Jackie is the real deal. So let's bring her on right now. Jackie Kraft. Hey, girl.
Hi, Dr. Michelle. Thank you so much for having me. And that was a lovely introduction.
Oh, boy. I'll tell you, Jackie and I, just to give the audience a little information, met at the Conscious Life Expo in February of this year. And we were both kind of standing next to each other. We were going in to see journalist Linda Moulton Howe lecture. And we started talking. We got to talking. And we both found out a lot of things that we had in common, not only her media background, which I'm going to share with you, but also that we were really fascinated with experiencers, the UFO, the ET phenomenon. And as a matter of fact, she pulled out a book that she's written. She said, would you like to have a copy of my book? And it went from there. And I said, oh, we've got to do this interview because I want to clear up a lot of things that, you know, people believe.
There are a lot of skeptics. You're absolutely correct. Sure. And I think that's just fine. To me, the interesting thing is about 3 or 4 years, I've wanted to write this book, since I retired when I was about 60, 65. Yeah. And every once in a while, I'll come to it and I'll think, oh, now is the time.
Right.
I get these feelings, or there are sort of, I don't know exactly how to say, barriers that happen. Like maybe I needed a knee operation or something.
Right.
Or my child had to have heart operation or something. And so I kind of put it off. And when I have a communication with one of the ETs, I'll show you my cover and point him out.
Very cool.
I would say to him, do I have permission to do this? I know you'll open the pathway and it'll be an easy slide into home plate if it's time. And finally, about a year or so ago, I just thought there's going to be a disclosure. Probably a lot of the information that's been kept secret.
Sure.
And I know there's a lot. Is going to be released. There'll be a disclosure. And you and I were talking about it because we were listening to Linda Moulton Howe. She and I had sort of parallel experiences. She was the CBS reporter in Denver for about, I'll say 35 years off and on. She was at other stations. And she always covered cattle mutilation. I've never covered
sure
that.
Right.
But I worked at the CBS affiliate here in town, as well as their radio station in the newsroom. Yes. But anyway, I finally decided to write it. And because I was retired, my children were grown. Both of my husbands, sadly, had passed away. And I felt like, and maybe it won't impact anybody or embarrass them. Of course, it embarrasses my cousins and my brother.
But my daughter
gone. And I just decided, oh, and by the way, this morning I looked up on Google, Spielberg has completed his movie.
And I am so looking forward to it.
It's going to be released June the 12th next summer. Wow. And I don't think he's releasing the title, but I think one of the working titles is called Disclosure. Mm-hmm. But before that, it was called The Dish, like talk.
Right.
But I think he's been filming in New Jersey, and I get this feeling. It's about this and he hasn't told anything about the plot, but I keep having this feeling it's about this young kid. He was about 16 driving in a car with his dad.
Right.
And his dad had had experiences with, anyway, and that kid is all grown up now and was at our expo. By the way, have you gone to those expos before?
I have. I really enjoy them. And I really, you know, of course, all the speakers who are of like-minded, you know, as we are. But what I wanted, you know, to, is it, let me just pull up some information so folks could know a little bit more here about you too. And I know you mentioned you were working, of course, in news and documentaries, and you've produced interviews, promos, mini documentaries for various CBS TV and radio news affiliates in your area also. And you were on-air talent. You produced news editorials for The Women's Show for PBS. And you also have a, this is what I love about you, is you have special education, besides everything else, you have a special education master's degree.
I do, yes.
And you taught behavioral disorders. Now that's difficult, working with a lot of autistic and learning disability children. And you also taught in the district, the school districts of where
several districts. Mm-hmm. The last 7 years I've been living in Oklahoma, but when I was working, I really only worked at the stations about 5 years. I always wanted to be a writer. I remember telling my mother, I was about seven, and she said,
sure.
She had been a teacher for 40 years. And she said, oh, my dear, what will you do with your children?
Right.
Well, that was way back before we had daycare and nannies. And anyway, so she said, most people grow up, girls will be a secretary or a nurse or a teacher. And really, that was true.
Sure.
And she said, oh, if you really want to study, you could be a lawyer or a doctor. But anyway, I did end up, I had been accepted to a school back east. My daddy died very suddenly when he was 50. And I graduated in 61. That's how far long back. I'm 82. I'll be 83 next month.
Yeah.
But anyway, so my uncle, who was a professor in engineering at KU, said, come up, I'll help you go to the state school. They get the best professors, blah, blah, blah. So I did. I applied and I went there and I just loved it. And I wanted to go to the School of Journalism there, William Allen White, it was named for. But I became a school teacher. And then that year they had fellowships. You know, we didn't have student loans back then.
Sure, sure.
To do a master's in behavior. And they didn't even really have a department, but they had a classroom at the KU Med Center. And the little kids had been diagnosed as schizophrenic, psychotic. We didn't even have the word, well, we had autism. Only two children had been diagnosed in greater Kansas City of a million people. And so they thought it occurred one every 600, now about one every 30. But anyway, long story short, I became a school teacher. I had the first classroom at the KU Med Center for Behavior. Then they decided to put the room out in districts. And about 7 years later, a public law went in that all districts had to serve children and provide education in keeping with special ed needs. And so that's how...
Yes.
It evolved.
And I thank you.
It was a challenge.
Oh, of course it was. But again, you have a loving heart and a kind and giving heart. And I think it's so important for viewers, listeners, to really understand that I can't say enough that you are the real deal. I met Jackie in person, as I said, folks, and we had a nice chat, and her book is fascinating. Here it is. I'm going to hold it up right now.
Oh, thank you. Well, let me
Point
out two characters on the front of it. The lady who did my artwork, you know, everything, as your producer mentioned, is done over Zoom or internet.
Ever
since we've been into,
it's a darling cover.
Well, this is the back. I just love how she made a little UFO and had it shine down on what I wanted to say. She lives in Florida. She herself has written books, but...
Yeah.
And she worked with me. So I said, well, you know, I'd like to
have, why not?
This might be too scary on a cover. I said, but I want to tell the truth as I know the truth to be. So this little fellow here is one of the very first that I interacted with. He was about 3 feet tall and he always thought inside my head. I'd talk out loud. And I said to him one time, I was probably six. Well, do you have a name? And it was like, and I said, can you say it out loud? Do you talk? And he kind of like made that with some R's and L's.
And that was in your, and that, excuse me for interrupting, are, how do you receive, how did you receive?
It's so strange. Information? So strange. Now, some will allow me to be present for a message that'll just like flash through my brain, or maybe on TV, or I'll hear a song.
And you're not thinking about anything particularly.
No, it just particularly. Comes. Okay. Yeah. But with him, and it's way inside the inside of my brain. I can hear his voice distinctly. Each male entity, and I've maybe come across, I say 12 to 15 because they shapeshift. You can tell if they're a male or a female.
Right.
And his is sort of a medium, not as deep as my father's voice, but a deeper male voice. And he said his name, it sounded like it was Mert or Mret. And so I've always called him Mret. And this is a little sidekick who was only 2 feet tall. Uh-huh. And they're skinny and spindly and skeletal looking, emaciated.
All right.
Also, his eyes are the right kind of eyes. There was no shine. The artist had to put the shine there to make it look rounded. And the middle one was about 5 feet tall. I met her way later, and she came to do certain medical procedures on me. And I always called her Queenie because she was like a head taller than the little ones that came in with her. They were about 4 feet taller than these two. And I just called them names. And she, when she spoke to me, I knew instantly that she was a female type nurse. And I thought, okay, I'm hoping that people approach this book with calmness because they were good friends to me. They did good deeds. They always came with an agenda. They always let me know they were coming and usually gave me about a heads up of 30 minutes to an hour. And I have to tell you, I was a little panicky each time.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Even though they would take like, samples of my hair or skin or tissue from inside my cheek, they were gentle and they had a mission that they were trying to complete. And so I thought, well, all right, you know, I just accepted it all my life.
What I'd love to do is get into the backstory because I want, first of all, why did you decide to come out after all these years?
Oh my gosh. Well, I did ask permission and I felt like he said to me, yes, you can go ahead. You can go ahead. Yeah. In my opinion, different groups have covered the earth and that they're here because they have a need to survive. They need to keep the world calm and free of war, which we're not doing a very good job of right now. And that they have certain people that they need to find. And I try to explain it in the back of my book. I think they're looking for certain blood types. I think they're looking for certain tissues. And I wanted to ask Linda Moulton Howe, because she covered a cattle mutilation quite thoroughly.
Sure.
I think that they're like other beings, creatures that need nourishment.
Okay.
I read somewhere that somebody thought they were vegetarians and they made their own chlorophyll. No, I think they get the nourishment from some of the cattle, but also I think they're testing the cattle to see if been diseased or poisoned by nuclear, you know, the atom bombs that they tested.
Well, that makes sense. And as we learned from Colonel Corso, of course, in The Day After Roswell, famous book, one of the, as Linda says, this is the first book that really tells the story, you know, after, we exploded the nuclear bomb and destroyed Hiroshima. And,
I read that Susan Hayward and Dick Powell and somebody else were out filming a film and that possibly they had radiation poisoning from that. So
they're
monitoring certain things. And I felt like it was time. And the other thing is a lot of times, well, as you know, you live out in LA and a lot of movies are made. A lot of stories are told and you have to keep the conflict coming and the fear.
Right. They're all negative. They're all theories. Well, I think Close Encounters of the Third Kind was not.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right. It was more a curiosity and what I call a positive draw.
Right.
knowledge.
Steven Spielberg does more positive movies about possible encounters, I think. But so let's go. So you decided that.
So I wanted to tell a story about gentle beings that I had run into. I was only really scared once. And actually, the memory of that is blocked. I'd like to get a hypnotist and explore why I'm so afraid. But I think I can pull it up myself eventually.
Sure.
Because I'm trying. I try to meditate and try to go back to the scene of why I was so afraid. But
My gosh.
Others were all good experiences.
You were a little girl. Tell me how long ago you started having these experiences and what they were like.
Before I was even able to talk, I was in a crib and these little shining light bulbs would come and dance around. And sometimes they would stop and they were... And I would stand up in my crib. I remember this. And they were kind of lower to the floor. And then they would change into a being like this little gray creature. Yeah. And I was always fascinated with their eyes. And I remember before I can even say words, they took one out and showed me their little tiny eyeball. And then they put the thing back on like goggles. And I...
All right.
And I can remember my mother getting me out of the bed and holding me, and and I pointed to the light, and I don't know why, but I said light. I remember saying my first word, but I can remember back when I was another person, about 27 years old. I was born about 1914. And everybody talks about near-death experiences, about how they go into the light and they have a life review, and that's what they remember. I remember being on the table, and I don't remember having any interaction with ETs, but I remember I was having an operation. The doctor was kind of to the left of me and about a foot or two away. The anesthesiologist was behind me, and he said, and then the nurse was here and another person. And I was sort of facing north in the hospital up on the third floor. And the anesthesiologist said, "We're losing her. I think we're losing her." And I remember floating out of my body and looking at them and looking back and thinking, I don't need the body anymore, going through the brick wall over the park.
It's traumatic, right? So we leave our kind of, we have to.
And I floated all the way to this backyard and I did have a life review. There was this being there, just the most beautiful thing about 2 feet off the ground. And he said, "We're going to look at every day in your life and see if you did anything good. And you're going to have one last chance to reincarnate.
Really?
And you have to be good." And he showed me one day at a time my life, but you could go into the life, a three-dimensional picture. And I had some pets and their little bowls were not full of food. And we would flip through like, and years later, probably years, 40 years later, I worked at a TV station and they could do page flips. It was like that. I didn't understand. Right. But anyway, so he said, "This is going to be your last chance. You didn't take care of your pets and you need to feed them and give them water and be kind and always tell the truth." I mean, he really showed me things that were less than nice and perfect in that lifetime. And then he let me float up, or I floated up, and there was this like technicolor jungle gym, you know how in a it was colored lights, pale pink, pale lavender, pale green. And if you could float through those, you didn't hit it electronically. The electricity would erase everything from your past life or what you remembered. And I thought, this time I'm going to remember everything if I can. And I did float through. And then I remember after I was having the remembrance of this, I was in my new life as me now, Jackie, and I was about 6 years old. And I thought, I remember all of that. And I even remembered my name for a long time. I think it was something like, and for years I would search obituary pages, you know, before we had Google and stuff. Yeah.
Sure.
And to try to find out, and or if I was in a random cemetery, I would look for a tombstone. But anyway, so throughout this whole life, I felt like I've had this closeness with that guardian spirit. But then as I went along, there were all these other amazing entities, like some that had followed my mother, her life, and her own, and my grandmother, from when they walked from Iowa in 1886 out to western Kansas, and then later came into Oklahoma Territory. So it goes way back. But what I really remember is not even really being able to walk, but we'd sit out in the backyard. This is in Oklahoma. And my grandmother would say, "I think we're going to have guests." And across the
end. And you were 6 years old.
No, this time I was about less than one. This is the first time I remember really. Well, six, yes, when I had this remembrance of the past life.
Right.
Going back to when I was in this lifetime as a baby and didn't walk yet, it was World War II, and we were down in Carmen, Oklahoma, in my grandmother's backyard, and they donated the park and helped build the park for a place in the town, but in between was a wheat field, and this I want to say just like a saucer-like thing, like you see a traditional, what I call UFO, kind of came down. It hovered above the ground, and these little balls of light, about nine of them, came sparkling out and bouncing along until they came to the backyard. My mother got my hand and picked me up, and my grandmother took my other hand, and because I detected that they weren't sure whether I was going to be taken or not. And then finally they materialized into sort of beings like this taller E.T., gray Queenie, that I call Queenie. And my mother said, "Please don't take her. She doesn't have teeth. She doesn't know how to talk. She doesn't walk. I don't take any hair or skin." Because sometimes they would take my mother's tooth. Over the years, I learned that they had fallen in love with my grandmother's beautiful black hair and my mother's hair. It was so black, it had like blue highlights. And in fact, my mother passed when she was about 91, and it was still just black as ever with just a tiny little bit of gray. But anyway, that was my first encounter. And I think the next visit was with the little being that I call Mrat. And it all kind of began with him.
And how old were you then?
I must have been about, I know we moved up the day after Christmas in 1945 from Oklahoma to Kansas. And it must have been just prior to that. I was probably 2 and a half. And I just remember being up in the what I call the spaceship, and he pointed out to look at these, well, what we would call now TV monitors, and they completely circled the whole round inside of this control panel room we were in. And he said, it was a very stern warning for another ET that was with him, but he was kind of with me and standing close. And it looked like destruction in each one. And then it would loop around and show me a picture one at a time. And it was like along the border between Canada and the United States. And these bombs, I guess, were coming in and destroying every town along the way, at least
past
Chicago. It was. And I was very little. I mean, I didn't understand at all. And I didn't understand the technology. But he said, people have to learn to be peaceful and get along with each other. That was the message. And I've since read it and heard it from other people who've had passed that warning along.
Right, right.
So, then one time I remember these taller beings, they might have even been 6 feet. They would wear a kind of a gray uniform if they came off the UFO. But on board, they sort of wore robes, and I wanted to see what their skin looked like. And we were running out of time. But finally, one time I was on with him, and this one being let me pull it back, and I looked at it, and I thought, why, that's all wrinkly and kind of grayish white. Right. I said, why, it's like elephant skin. And I know I was only about 6 or 7 that time. But in that time, they had actually, my mother was with me, and I was on the table, and they were putting one of those, well, I call it a monitor, in my nose. And sometimes it was like a little ball bearing. And sometimes when I would sit up, it would fall out and there would be a bloody nose. But then they would do it again. That was a little painful, I will say. I don't know if it punches into the brain or what. I don't know, but okay. I remember just different snips of things that happened.
Some people have said that those are tracking devices, because just like we track whales and species all over the world, you know, we have little chips so we can track, you know, their progress and their family. We're not trying to hurt them or kill them. We're just trying to track their, you know, travels
and movements and understand maybe their animal behavior. I do think they're here. Well, I believe that they live underground in mountains, under the sea, all over, plus up in the orbits, but and on the back of the moon. Mm-hmm. But I feel like they want to understand us, and maybe they need our tissue. Maybe they need our enzymes to stay alive.
Perhaps. And, you know, a lot of people, let me just show your book again. I'm talking with Jackie Kraft. She's the author of this book, and it's controversial, but it's fascinating. The stories are great. And some of my best friends are ETs. It sort of lays out her experiences, where she lived, her family. And we're going to talk about that as well, and how her grandmother had experiences. And this is what I'm understanding from a lot of people. Her mother had experiences, of course, her brother, and we'll talk about him in a bit as well. But look, folks, I know there's a lot of skeptics, and I'm getting some texts from folks on Straight Talk Doc. I mean, emails rather, straighttalkdoc@gmail.com. And that's fine. Oh, it's the little green men again, is it? Well, I've never done an interview like this specifically, because I haven't felt right about the person who's the real deal. For a long time. Jackie's the real deal.
Thank you.
A lot of her experiences were, she's a down-to-earth person who's not going to make this stuff up. And a lot of people are saying, oh, she was a child, very creative in her mind. And that's fine. Whatever you, there's no argument. There's no anything. But I just want to point out, let's take a look at what's going on. We've got the Senate hearing committee that's been trying to meet over years with so-called military whistleblowers. It's happening. They're interested. They want some kind of information. They want to be read in. And those whistleblowers continue saying, I can only talk to you about that in a SCIFT, right? All right. A secure, you know, environment. So there's things that are really happening. Of course, the movies, we'll talk about that in a minute. But look, we have a lot of information from Dr. Stephen Greer that's going on now. His work has been going on since the 90s. I've joined one of his groups in his, you know, CE5 excursions. Fascinating. Yes, it's real. For me, I'm not a, look, Jackie and I are thinking that we're, you know, wait, did I imagine that? No, we saw it. And so did all the people with us who validated it. Jacques Vallée. Of course, you have Bud Hopkins.
May I say, these experiences, those were just my beginning ones. They continued through my teenage years.
Right.
There were some at KU, Kansas University, and on into my young days when I had my marriage to my first husband. He died young. And with my children, I had two children by that marriage. And then all the way up until I thought they were totally done with me.
Yeah.
But that was about 5 years ago, my last experience. So I'm 82 now. But I totally understand people being skeptic if they don't have any missing time or any inclination to pick up a book on this or any draw that they feel. I just want to say the few people I admired, like my father-in-law, who had experiences. He was born in 1921 in Kansas on a farm and grew up to design three components, major components of the stealth bomber, the Black Hawk helicopter, and the fighter plane.
He was with Skunk Works, right?
Oh, he worked for Skunk. Yeah, Skunk Works. He joined probably when he came. This is odd. Most people were either sent to the Pacific Theater or the European Theater in World War II. He had worked on the assembly line at Beach Aircraft in Wichita. And then he was about 20 when Pearl Harbor happened, when he went in the Army. Instead of being sent to either of those, he was sent to the Panama, embedded with an albino Indian tribe, Native Panamanian Indian tribe, and it was a listening post. And then they moved it to Chile. I don't say that right. I think it's Chile. And that was the listing post for most of the Southern Pacific theater.
Right.
There was another one in Bermuda for Atlantic. But anyway, when he left there, he was taken into Skunk Works, which had started back in 35. And then he first was at White Sands right after the war.
Right.
And then in the 50s, he helped design and test the jet ejection seat. And from there, he designed secret missile targets. Right. Oh, you have no idea. He went one time. My husband was graduating from dental school, and he said, well, I'm going to be gone. We don't know how long. It might be 9 months or a year. You can't know what country I'm going to. You can't know my mission, blah, blah, blah. No. But you can write to me at Edwards Air Force Base, which I think is part
of
it.
And this is your dad.
No, my father-in-law. I'll tell you about your dad. He had amazing experiences. Wow. And so come to find out, it was finally allowed to not be classified. And he was, to the day he died, he lived to be 99 years old. Wow. He was on a 24-hour standby from the Pentagon. Wow. Now, who gets a 24-hour standby unless you're with the CIA and know how to repair the stealth bomber or something secret? But anyway, he had many experiences with little ETs giving him advice and coming right in, closing the electrical down at some base, wherever they were testing, whatever.
Nuclear. Oh,
I could, in fact, I'm going to write a book called Spy versus Spy, maybe, about his life if I can get to it. Because sure he has. Anyway,
that's so
cool, Jackie. So I respect him. And I think, well, if he had experiences and believes this, it's okay for me to believe that what I think happened to me did. Plus, the man who was our major anchor, I mean, we were considered a big market, being Kansas City, we ranked 23rd. Wendell Anschutz, who has since passed, he had had some amazing experiences. We never talked to many other people about it.
Sure.
But I respected him, and he was such a good anchor, reporter, news person. He was like, give me the facts stand for themselves, and I stand on the facts.
That's the thing. And I think it's amazing from some of the people who I've spoken with, interviewed so-called whistleblowers. They've told me that a lot of either their relatives who have been involved in organizations or working for Skunk Works or, you know, whatever, underground at Groom Lake, whatever you want to call it, you know, that's Area 51. Other bases that are in secret programs. They've told me that a lot of the crafts that we have, a lot of the jets, a lot of, you know, they were created from downed.
From back.
And I had from extraterrestrial craft that we've downed. And it's been way before. I mean, look at the ancient paintings. Look at the you know, petroglyphs you can find and ancient aliens programs, things like that. They've been here for millennia. But I think what you're talking about is, you know, fascinating to a lot of people, because what we're getting is all the information about people who have been in the programs and their relatives and their whoever is with them, like your father-in-law, that kind of thing. They're exposed to it. They know a lot of things that are going on. And
me as an outsider, just kind of observing, I get like a little glimpse, but you put them together over time. And may I say, we finally were told, it was like 40 years later, not 40 years later, but at least 20 years, that he had been sent on a mission for Nixon had not ever been to China. We hadn't opened up that trade with them in years. And he was sent in to assess the technology.
Right.
So you get to keep your own name, apparently. And I remember he said it was like walking around in Kansas in the 1920s. People had chicken coops and telephones and no radios. Or maybe a few in one town would have a radio. And our government just wanted to know what, before they sent Nixon in to have his, was it with Mayo Day Sung? I can't remember. That big meeting that he went to, and they knew that he could assess the technology for them. But I will say that stealth bomber that he worked on, and other things, a lot of things the government has for maybe 30 or 40 years before we ever get to know that it exists. And maybe we are seeing some of these experimental things, crafts, inventions, or secret weapons that they don't want to tell us about yet. And people think they're seeing ETs, creations, or something like that.
Sure, sure. We all
my book is on Amazon.com. May I say that? If anybody,
yes. And I was just going to, you know, say that, you know, there's, you can find also information. What's a great website for you as well, so people can see?
Well, thank you for asking. I just took it down this month. I'm going to revise it. I have my first book on it, and my first book, may I tell you that I'm a little tiny bit Cherokee Indian, a little tiny bit everything.
Sure, sure.
So I wanted to
talk about that as well. Yeah, because that's a great, I love that book you sent me. Thank you.
Thank you. Native Americans have a real lifetime experience with,
yes,
a lot of their creation stories, like the Hopis, yes, they say the sky people came down. So I called it Under a Sunflower Moon because the Native Americans name each month and sunflowers grew so much. And the artist I had was a full Creek Indian, God love her. She worked so hard on this cover and the back because
really
when beautiful. You live at the edge of town, there's natural sunflowers, yes, growing all over the Midwest. And sadly, she had cancer and died a month after I published this. And I did it kind of as a stalking horse. I just wanted to see, could I tell a little something about what the Cherokee and the Trail of Tears and survival and, oh, they like to sleep on tobacco leaves because bugs don't like to bite them. But anyway, I thought, well, if I can do that, I think I can tell this whole experience I've had with trees and other people. But it's been fun. I'm working on about 7 other books simultaneously at the same
Good
time.
Good for you. That's wonderful.
How did you come, may I ask, how did you come to be in that line and listen to Linda Moulton Howe? Had you heard her speak before, or was she on your program?
Yeah, I have not had her on my program, and thanks for asking, Jackie. I've just been interested in the subject since I was very young. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. I have always been fascinated with space, looking up at the stars, and I've had, I won't get into it because I still, like you were for many years, I'm holding things that I'd rather not share because I don't want to be judged by people.
I don't blame you. I have been talking right now to you about this. And
I have had
the opportunity to be brave.
Oh, thank you. And they could be what you called screen memories we have. Freud came out with that idea that in order to in order to cope with various traumatic experiences, we form screen memories. Mm-hmm. Sort of helps us overlay some of the things and the fear. And so that I have some flashes, I have memories, I have some things that are mm-hmm. not too unpleasant.
Well, we have one that was related to Linda Moulton. I was in line because I've had a screen memory for a long time. I grew up in a town that had lots of rail in this lifetime as Jackie. 26 railroad tracks through town, mostly San Jose. Some went out to San Bernardino through the Grand Canyon area, and some went to Fort Worth connected to Chicago. But we also had another train line that went through called the Missouri Pacific, kind of that went up to Seattle and down to maybe Louisiana. So the trains were always going through and blowing their whistles. And the Santa Fe had the modern streamlined locomotives, but we had on the Missouri Pacific, the old, we call them puffer bellies with the big cow catcher in front. Sure. And if you ever looked at a picture, you know, they're burning coal and the cow catcher lifts up the cow gently and then comes to a halt. And I lived, half a block from those tracks. In my screen memory, I see this, instead of black cow catcher, I see this silvery cow catcher rounded like the edge of a saucer. And I'm up in the, with the engineer who is my little friend, Murat. And we are driving, or he's driving, and I'm asking questions. And he said, well, we're going to go on this track. It was like way out in Western Kansas where I'd never been to see this. And he said, we're going to go through a dark tunnel. You'll have to close your eyes tight and not look because it will be too scary to you. And we had just a caboose on the end with lots of little people, friends like Sandy and Queenie, but little ones. And they were crawling all over and working on controls and getting ready for, and they had a table and some jars, or not jars, but like big containers that they stored things in. And he said, all right, here comes the tunnel. Close your eyes. I did. And it was like everything in my memory goes black, like a black screen. And I am afraid. And I hear no sounds, nothing, no crickets, no dogs, no cows, no whatever. And then all of a sudden we're back out and we're going through the countryside and it's Colorado. And I felt like that we had been actually, that it wasn't a locomotive, it was a saucer on a mission. And when it went black was when they were scooping up a cow or whatever, other things, rabbits, whatever they needed to check. And it was too scary for me as a young person, maybe 27, to really see as a witness. And that's a screen. That's one of many screen memories I have.
Wow.
Basically, I've been allowed to remember things. My brother, nothing.
he just didn't remember. Is he, first of all, I have so many questions as well. We don't have too much of a lot of time, but I want, weren't you scared? Weren't you terrified? And was your brother terrified? I mean, what do you remember feeling as a little girl and all throughout your life that you've been taken?
Well, in retrospect, I am afraid, but I feel like, oh, we live in this vast universe. Of course, there's got to be civilizations. And a friend did tell me there might be 180 different kinds of creatures, beings.
Right.
And
the whistleblowers are talking about that. Mm-hmm.
But my little brother was so interesting. In the first chapter of my book, I tell about how my folks had built a brand new house out at the edge of town. And I had had this, it was like about 2 a.m. and Mert had said in my brain, we're coming and I'm bringing a whole lot of people. Don't be afraid, blah, blah. And they did. They kind of hovered. Well, there was a big ship up above, but they came in a smaller ship about 10 at a time. They just walk through the screen door. They don't open it up. And it was summertime. And they.
Right. And that's a scientific molecular. Yeah. I think they can change. Look, if they can travel from Zeta Reticuli or wherever, you know, with the binary star system, they can walk. They can arrange their molecular structure.
Exactly.
Right.
And they came in and they want. I remember this one in charge said, well, we want to see if you can do mind over matter. He didn't say it exactly that way, but he said, we want to give you some tests. And he had like a little matchbox. We used to have the little wooden matches you strike and no cover on top. And may I tell you about my brother? He ended up working for IBM in New York City. I think that headquarters was right next to Trump Tower in Manhattan. He lived up in Westchester where the other IBM headquarters were, and he did inventions, and he was part of a think tank. And he's so interesting. He taught himself Python, which is the secret computer, or not secret, but it's a computer language the Pentagon uses, and something else, AI. And
well, that's very interesting.
Anyway, they tested me, and I could not do the test, so we got my mother and my little brother up, and he was only 4 years old, and he could make it work. And then afterwards, she would take him in the kitchen whenever they would come and test us. And he loved milk, and they would put something in the milk, I think. I just have this hazy memory.
You're saying, excuse me for interrupting, you're saying that they would come, when they came to visit, when they sort of targeted your family, whatever, and they would test you and your brother?
For achievement, to see if we had abilities like precognition. I always had ESP afterwards, and I'm writing a separate book on that because some of the stuff that that I've known ahead of time has been so strange.
Well, we all have it. It's just opening up and knowing and working on it. But you seemingly, and that's maybe why they were very interested
in
you.
This one particular test had like a little tiny orange ball floating between two partitions. And you had to make the ball go through the partition to the end, back to the center, back to this end, and back. And I could kind of get it through into the front. The being in charge could make it go back and forth. So when my brother got up, he took a hold of it. And he got it kind of spinning. It went through. It was still orange back and forth. And pretty soon it was going so fast it was blue, like the color of this blue shirt, spinning, and then pretty soon silver. And then he was done. And I think they were not only looking for certain blood types, ours is O negative, certain abilities, like can you reach into a bag and tell, pull out an object and tell the future for...
Right.
Say the planet Venus. Maybe it was like all the planets in a bag. And I don't know how to explain it. They just wanted to know what time they like took a machine and made it go through my head this way and then this way and then this way. And they got all the knowledge that was there. I was probably 59 years old. And I thought it was so strange. They didn't drain me of knowledge, but they somehow were able to figure out what was stored in there.
Well, I mean,
is that bizarre?
No. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, we all have the ability, except those who perhaps had some serious brain damage or brain, for ESP. And I've talked to a few people who have been in the so-called 20 and back program, the military. Mm-hmm. And they talk about being tested when they were younger. And I am familiar with that particular test. I've heard about that. So you're not making, I mean, I've heard.
You know, that's very interesting you bring that up. Because when
it's telekinesis. It's telekinesis training. So
yes, telekinesis. They'll put an object on the table. Can you move it to the other end? Can you make
children
it
are a lot more apt to do that.
They are, but it still goes with you as an older person. Sure. If you allow. Do you know, as I would collect books and try to read and research and try to understand, if I read something that somebody else had experienced, then I'd really let my mind go into that and dwell on it and try to examine it more. But a lot of times I felt there was misinformation like put there to kind of throw me off, just different things. But I did read someone in Australia had seen this 8-foot, he called the Lion Man. Well, we moved into our house about 35 years ago, my teenage children and I, and I was actually teaching off and on at juvenile detention and at a psychiatric hospital. I had seriously ill, suicidal children, students. I mean, they're not behavior problems all the time. They need to learn in between. And I remember one night we had like a treehouse by the pool in the backyard. And I remember I couldn't hear it, but I knew we were all screaming and we were in the kitchen. I was trying to dial 911 and my daughter said, it's a lion up in the treehouse. And my son said, it has such long blonde hair, but it's a person and they're coming in the house. And they were huge. They must have been taller than the door frame. And that's just the memory I have. And I always called him the Lion. Yes. And when I looked closely, he had like a jumpsuit on and this mane of golden hair. I don't know if he was a Nordic, what people call Nordics. Mm-hmm. But I had read about it, or I mean, later I read about it, and somebody in Australia mentioned it. And I've always wanted to track somebody else down and find out, have you ever seen somebody like that? So that's kind of, I don't know, I just kept these things secret for so long. And now all I want to do is find out if other people have seen it or heard it or whatever.
Sure. And they could be screen memories. But I mean, I talked to several people in a community group. I'm curious about all this stuff. And then there's a community UFO ETs and consciousness expansion group. And I've talked to several of these people and, you know, again, our minds translate things differently and I'm not at all doubting and saying that, you know, oh, you're making this stuff up, Jackie, because I think you're the real deal. And I think you have been an experiencer. And I believe that I think we're baby stepping into disclosure.
I do think it'll be disclosed. And I hesitated to even publish my book because I thought maybe I want to wait for the government to announce some more things. But they have been holding conversations in Congress couple months ago.
Right.
And I think maybe next April, maybe some of it will come out just before Steven Spielberg's movie really tells us.
Well, that's the thing. And a lot of, I think a lot of production companies, and we just have a couple of minutes here left, but, you know, I think the whole thing is, you know, fear-based, a lot of it, you know.
Fear, yes.
Right. So many of the movies, you know, we're going to kick some E.T. butt or whatever, you know, all those movies that have come out from whenever, when we were little, we used to watch these movies and get scared.
And the nature of being, I mean, there's always the sun, but there's the shadow. Everything
That's
exists
right.
with its opposite. And so if there is good and optimism, there's got to be the counterbalance, I think. And so I did read that the Star Trek, the man that was it Star Trek? Yes, I think it was that. Mm-hmm. was informed by or helped by some entities, and that they had like a federation, and they had a code of ethics, which makes sense to me because I think their technology is far beyond us. So why wouldn't their civilization of kindness and fairness and freedom of speech, blah, blah, be also advanced? I mean, it makes sense a little bit to me.
Exactly.
You know.
Well, Jackie, thank you so much for being here. I love it. You're a lovely person. You're the real deal. I believe you. And thank you for writing this book. Some of my best friends are ETs. It's a positive look. It's nobody's ever tried to hurt you or frighten you.
I've never seen some of the things that other people have, like the reptilians or hateful people. But, you know, I'm sure others, if they say they've experienced something traumatic, it may really be true. So
it sure might.
Positive thought is what I say, and give everything an open-minded chance, you know.
Exactly. I agree. So you can find her book, by the way, on Amazon, and just Google it. It's Some of My Best Friends Are ETs, Jackie Kraft. With a K. Also, talking about her other book, Under a Sunflower Moon, Cherokee Stories and Poems. A lot of wisdom there that you'll find. And it's fascinating and lovely book as well. Jackie, we'll have you back on again. I want to get more into the weeds with you on this subject because I'm fascinated.
Okay.
All Thanks right. for being here.
Thank you for letting me say what I wanted to say. Anything.
Oh, we've got more. And there's so much more.
Well, I think so. I think we've barely scratched the surface. Thanks again.
Blessings to you and your family, Jackie.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And we'll come back next week with another fascinating subject. Thanks for joining me on the couch. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.